I have this dinosaur book that I got from somebody in elementary school.
Oh, yeah?
I traded for it.
And you never let it go?
I never let it go. I also have Pokemon cards, but those are on the floor.
Well, let's get recording.
Let's get recording.
All right, are you all set?
My head. Yeah.
Okay. 3, 2, 1, click.
Click. And suddenly the audio is so much better.
And suddenly the audio is crystal clear.
This is a banner episode for us.
It is. We're starting a new book.
A whole new chunk of a book. We've left the past behind. We're moving into the future. No more Medusa. It's all about something. It's all about fabulosity.
It's all about fabulous, formless darkness.
Fabulous, formless darkness. Do you know? Okay, so, hey everybody, I'm Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And it's Del Toro time. I actually had somebody ask me about the title of the show last night, and they were like, Del Toro. And I'm like, yeah, it used to be a Guillermo del Toro podcast. Now all we do, the only time we ever talk about him is when we complain about whatever his next project's going to be. Frankenstein. How will he handle the 12th retelling of Frankenstein? He better just stick exactly to the book. Like, that's the only way it could be anything fresh, because he's retold this story already about 100 different ways.
I'm just excited for the visuals. The visuals are what I'm looking forward to.
I hope at the end he surprises us all by making Frankenstein turn into a real live boy.
He just retells Pinocchio.
Right. But the parts he left out of Pinocchio.
I hope he puts into Frankenstein. Changes the story.
I hope Frankenstein turns into a donkey. And it's like, no.
I hope this is the one movie where he doesn't tell the Frankenstein story.
Right. This is actually a more accurate retelling of a Nightmare Alley.
Yeah.
So we're on the third chunk of David G. Hartwell's seminal classic.
The Dark Descent.
The Dark Descent.
I don't know why I went British for that one.
The Dark Descent, Gavna? No. We're on the third chunk. This is called...
Smoke Ghost.
No, not
the
yet.
Chunk.
The chunk.
A fabulous
formless darkness. So we had been covering psychological horror, and now we are shifting into stories that revolve around doubt, dread, and the unsettling question of reality. Stories that take an atmosphere of anxiety and discomfort to make us more aware that something terrible, something we can't quite pin down, I'm reading this by the way, is happening right before our eyes.
Suddenly my audio's louder.
Yeah. It's horror. It's
I forgot to turn my microphone up.
Defies direct confrontation, and that's what makes it truly horrifying. And it's not all necessarily supernatural either.
No, I mean, not all horror is supernatural, but this first story is by far a ghost.
It's pretty much supernatural. It takes a turn from the supernatural to like the cosmic at the end,
yeah.
Which is totally a shocker. But first, who are we talking about? Whose story is this?
We are talking about Fritz Lieber.
Fritz Lieber. Now, we talked about Fritz Lieber before.
Mm-hmm.
In our episode a few years ago on... It was years ago. On Night of the Eagle. A mm-hmm. movie that I believe you and I watched in the living room together.
We did.
Yes. Sat in the living room, watched Night of the Eagle, based on Fritz Lieber's novel, Conjure Wife. A fantastic novel. So we talked a little bit about Lebo M.
No.
Not Lebo M. Fritz Lieber. Can I just give a little quick rundown on his story again? Just for those of those.
I mean, I was expecting you to, because
okay.
I don't remember it at all.
Fritz Lieber, the Liebs. He was born the day before Christmas Eve, 1910. He's long dead.
Damn.
He was raised by actors, which is like the worst thing in the world. His parents were Shakespearean actors. He toured around the country with them. I believe when I did this research earlier, like I found old playbills and stuff starring like his father, Fritz Lever Sr., and his mom. They were like famous. And
nice.
So he got his start in the theater. He was going to be a theater guy, but he ended up going to the University of Chicago. He got his undergraduate degree in psychology. He graduated in 32. So like this was years ago.
Just a few.
And he didn't start writing, though, until he got into H.P. Lovecraft. But his big kickoff was as a fantasy writer. In the 1930s, he created two characters, Fafford and the Grey Mouser.
Oh, I remember this now.
Yes, yes. Which basically created American high fantasy. In fact, the term sword and sorcery was created by Fritz Lieber. Like, he coined that phrase. So whenever you hear anyone talk about sword and sorcery stories, that's it. He invented it. And kind of that idea of, like, it's not high fantasy in the Tolkien sense. It's more high fantasy in the, well, what would become the Dungeons and Dragons sense. It's that
yeah.
kind of high fantasy. So, yeah, Fafford and the Grey Mouser basically influenced Dungeons and Dragons. And, in fact, he ended up licensing a bunch of his fantasy settings to Dungeons and Dragons in his later life because he was broke and alcoholic and his wife died and he got depressed and he needed money. But so D&D basically saved his life in that regard.
D&D also saved my life, my social life at least.
Yeah. He was also a chess champion, like an international chess champion. So, you know, I really hate people who are good at everything. So stink on that, Fritz Lever.
I was gonna make a really dark, upsetting joke, but I won't.
He was an encyclopedia writer. He was a drama teacher. He worked in aerospace during World War II. He contributed to the horror genre with Conjure Wife in 1943. That was like a huge, big deal. Originally published in Unknown Magazine. That's the name of the magazine. It's not an unknown magazine. The Hound, not Lovecraft's The Hound. The Hound, a werewolf story. The Button Molder and Horrible Imaginings, which was set in San Francisco. All these works really influenced the horror genre. But the one that really kicked it off, the one horror story that just began, like, not only Lieber's foray into horror, but changing the landscape of modern American horror in one fell swoop was the story we are discussing today. What is the name of the story?
Smoke Ghost.
Smoke Show.
Nope. Not quite.
This ghost is not a smoke show, except in the most literal sense of the word.
It is quite literally a smoke show.
1941's Smoke
Ghost.
Ghost. Is it about a ghost made of smoke?
It's about a ghost made of something.
Kind of. It's kind of about a ghost made of smoke. Not much of a metaphor. Originally published in, not unknown, the magazine's not actually called Unknown. It's Unknown Worlds. October 1941 edition of Unknown Worlds, one of about a Brazilian other stories, including A Good Night's Work by Robert Bloch, and that is K-N-I-G-H-T-S, and A Gnome There Was by Henry Cutner.
Hell yeah.
A Gnome There Was
that,
by Henry
We need
Cutner.
To cover that story.
We don't cover enough stories about gnomes. Also, Margaret Rodin's Finger. The title is the word finger twice, but with an exclamation point after each finger. Finger, short story by Margaret
I hope
Rodin.
It's about a finger that inches across the ground and kills people.
Has Finger been reprinted? Yes, Alfred Hitchcock's Stories for Late at Night and Stories for Late at Night Part 2. So good, he had to publish it twice. Finger. But we're not discussing Finger. We're not discussing A Gnome Named Norm. We are discussing Smoke Ghost. What, if you would be so kind, is Smoke Ghost?
Smoke Ghost is a short story.
The end.
It's about a guy What year does it take place in?
Well, I assume 41.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah.
Takes place in 1941, World War II era.
Right before our entry into World War II.
Yep. And it is about a man who has started seeing just a little guy.
a little guy.
Just a little guy. And there's a lot of, like, the entry into this story is a lot of, like, what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know. What is the word you're looking for?
I have a word, but I need to make sure it is the right word.
Spooky? Creepy?
Pontification.
Pontification.
About, like, the idea of the supernatural. Mm-hmm. He's talking to this woman, or our main character, whose name is something.
His name is Gans?
Gans. Cans?
He has a funny name.
He does. Catsby.
Catsby. That's his first name.
Yeah. Catsby.
Catsby? The Great Catsby?
The Great Catsby. Goodness gracious.
I'm just going to leave you hanging. Catsby. Ran.
I know it is. Ran. Catsby Ran.
Catsby Ran. I thought Gans. Is Catsby Ran? Catesby. I think it's Catesby. Is it Catesby or Catsby? Ladies and gentlemen.
His wife calls him Kate. His wife calls him Kate.
It's the most made-up name I've ever heard.
Yeah, it's not a real name. But I thought Miss Millick was going to be our main character. Because the first, like, couple of pages are from her POV.
From her perspective, yeah. He's talking about what if there was a ghost.
Yeah.
What would a modern ghost be? What I love about this, though, is that already Liebert flips this on its head, because the Lovecraftian, the sort of weird tales version of this would be a person being like, I've been wondering, what if a giant gorilla came through a window? What would you do? And another person would go, what an absurd notion. And then later on in the story, like, that exact thing would happen, and you'd be like, oh, they were just setting up the theme. But he does that in this, but then you realize he's not just imagining it. It's something he's actually dealing with in his life.
Yeah.
He's kind of like feeling out to see if he's crazy or not.
Yeah, because Miss Millick leaves, and then we're left with the Great Catsby. Mm-hmm. And he's like, so basically I was talking to this woman about this because I've been seeing this ghost, and I'm trying to distract myself from the fact that I've been seeing this ghost.
Now, the fascinating thing is, where has he been seeing this ghost? The story is set in Chicago.
On the elevated.
Yes. Not in a spooky mansion. No. Not in the subway. But way, way, way up high above the rest of the city. And that's one of the first, like, wild things about this. This story completely eschews the Gothic.
Yeah.
By setting everything, well, setting the beginning of it, like, the revelation is not in a confined space. It is, like, more of an infestation than a haunting.
Which is somehow worse.
Oh, well, yeah, a haunting is very localized.
Yeah. Because he passes by this like area, and he looks up at it to get us, like, he's like, I look at this to feel sad. And I'm like, you know what, man? Right on.
Yeah, he's on the L train, which is, for those not in the know, is Chicago's like elevated train. It goes above the rooftops, and he looks down at the roofs, and he keeps seeing this, like, first he thinks it's like an old bag, like an old black bag.
Full of coal.
But then it, like, is moving. It, like, moves around, and he's like, it's starting to freak him out, and he's just starting to get...
Because it keeps getting, like, closer.
Yeah, and, like, bigger and more defined, and whereas I would probably just be like, that's a bag. He's like, no, there's something really unsettling going on about this, and I think it's a reflection of our modern society.
I would see that, and then I'd forget about it, and then the next day I'd see it again and be like, hey, look, there's a thing there. And then I'd forget about it again.
Yeah, so every time he passes by, it's a little bit closer on the roof to the train, and it, like, jumps roofs. It gets closer and closer. And I've read this story before, but I hadn't read it in a while, and I forgot just how creepy it gets. I was like, oh, wait, is this going to be another one of those, like, is it all in his head? Is this like a psychological reflection of like industrialism? But this story actually gets kind of nuts.
I really like our main character because he's like he's grounded in reality.
And he has a history. He has a past.
He does. He does, which is past. Awesome.
Yeah, yeah. Like The Ring.
Yeah. He's freaked out and he's like, you know what? Ghosts aren't real. So I'm going to go see a psychiatrist. And I'm like, yep, there we go, man.
Yep.
That is your next best step. And he's like, I really don't want to see a psychiatrist because I don't want to be, they call it psychological abnormality.
Yeah, yeah. Well, again, 1941, this is like the beginning of this is like we are moving past Freudian analysis.
Mm-hmm.
We're into Jungian analysis now. And that's like a huge part of this story is like people are starting to go to the psychiatrist, but it still has this terrible stigma around it. Mm-hmm. And you could be labeled like psychologically abnormal.
Yeah.
Fortunately, his trip to the psychiatrist makes him feel a lot better.
Yep. Because he goes to the psychiatrist. And you know what? Not a bad trip to the psychiatrist. He talks about his past, where he used to have, when he was a kid, he supposedly had the ability to, like, see through objects.
Yeah.
Like, everything around him was, like, he had, like, x-ray vision, I guess, which is a less spooky way of putting that.
And, like, around corners.
Yeah. He had blind sense.
It's wild. And he became kind of a little, like, he was studied, right?
Yeah. First his mom started carting him around, like, doing shows and stuff.
Yeah.
And she really wanted him to be able to talk to the dead, but he was never able to do that.
Right.
But two, like, I think it was, like, Harvard, like, young Harvard psychiatrists, or whatever they were.
These researchers,
doctors, came and studied him. And then, as it always happens, on the day of the big, like, reveal, like, he loses his ability to do it, because...
Yeah. And he's, like, relieved.
Yeah.
Because this wasn't a fun life for him.
No, he hated it. And then his parents got divorced and his dad took him and he had a fun childhood.
Now, why do you think Lieber added this aspect to the story? Because the story could exist without knowing any of this about him.
Because it's fun.
It is fun.
There's also like the whole like showbiz childhood on Lieber's end.
That's true. That's true.
And I think that, like, I appreciated it because it really was, it added sort of a layer of, okay, something's definitely going on.
Yeah, yeah. That sense of, the fantastic does kind of exist in this world.
Mm-hmm.
I also wonder if, like, the latent powers he had allow him to perceive this thing before everyone else.
He mentions that in the beginning. He's like, you have to be sensitive in order for, like, blah, 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 blah. So I think that was what it was implying. It's a Shining situation.
Yeah, it really is. Like, he's a little more tuned in to this thing.
Yeah.
Not that not being tuned in does any great help to anyone else in this story, because as we shall see. So yeah, but at the end of his psychiatrist session, what happens?
He finishes his story about his childhood and he looks up and the psychiatrist is looking past him and looks absolutely terrified. And he's like, hey man, you good? The psychiatrist is like, nope.
Yep.
Closing the window. He's like, why? And he's like, I saw a man peeking through.
Yeah. But not just a man.
A racial slur.
A racial slur. But this begins our like sort of like foray into also people start seeing a black man, but they're always just like, but not like a black guy, like someone who's made up with like soot on their face, or like they've blacked themselves up for like a minstrel show.
Yeah, blackface. Like,
yeah, they're in blackface, which adds like a whole other layer to the story.
Yeah, it's like, okay, like, racism.
Because this is also a story is coming on the heels of what is called the Great Migration, where a lot of black Americans moved north.
Yeah.
And the white population of the north suddenly started getting all this anxiety about the encroaching black population in all of their cities. And so you also have that layer on top of this. There's, this is a story that deals not only with the industrialization of, it's funny though, because our last story, Jolly Corner, dealt a lot with the industrialization of American cities, the building up of the cities and how it's like ruining the landscape. And New York is now all these like giant skyscrapers and stuff.
Yeah.
This story comes sort of right after that, and it is also anxious about this, but it's not, it's more looking forward as opposed to pining for the past.
Yeah.
Like the other one does. This is all about, this story is all about seeing into the future, whereas Jolly Corner was all about like regrets you made, regrets for the choices you did or did not make. I think I said in the last episode, I feel like these two stories like complement each other well.
Yeah.
Because they seem to come from almost completely different worlds.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, I really like this story. But the psychiatrist sees the being. And Catsby is like, oh, sweet, you can see it too. I'm not crazy. I'll see you later. And the guy's like, wait, what? He's like, bye. And he goes, he's going to go home, but for some reason he's like, no, home seems like a bad idea.
Yeah.
Because he has a wife and a kid.
He does, yes. He's a family man. He's a, he's also seems to be a pretty well-adjusted guy. Like, at first I thought he was like some kind of like, you're like, little office worker. But then I was like, oh, wait, no. Like, as it goes on, I realize he's a, he's pretty level-headed. We're just seeing him at the worst time in his life.
Yeah, we're seeing him at his lowest.
Yes.
Which is what horror is all about, seeing the most well-adjusted at their lowest.
Right.
But he goes back to his office, and he goes, and he's like, I don't think the lights are a good idea. Because then I can see. And I'm like, dude. Then you can see. So he goes.
Is this before or after he gets the call from his wife?
I believe it's, I believe he talks to her during this.
Because she has a disturbing
Because she calls him and she's been trying to get a hold of him. And he's like, what's going on? And she's like, where are you? And he's like, I'm at the office, work. And she's like, okay, are you going to be home soon? Because I just saw some, or Ronnie just said that he saw someone in his window. It was probably just a dream, but it's really freaking me out.
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, I'll be home soon.
So this thing is around, and it's following him? It's really hard to say. It must be.
Yeah.
We're trying to find him.
Yeah. And so he's like, okay, I gotta go home. And he gets up, and then he hears something. And he's like, uh-oh. And then standing in his doorway is Mrs. Miss, not Mrs., because she's not married, Miss Millick.
Yep.
And everything's fine.
Miss Millick. Yep, who always liked him. She thinks he's really, she actually thinks he's pretty cute.
Yeah.
Has little crushes on him. It's the love story for the century, but.
Except for he's married.
Except he's married been. And the story is about to go somewhere else.
Yep. he's like, oh, you scared me. And she's like, hee hee, sorry. You look like crap.
He does.
Yeah, he's like, I'm fine. And she's like, no, 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 I got something in my bag here. And he's like, I'm fine. She's like, no, here. What is it that he says he sees?
At what point?
Where is it? Blah, 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 blah.
Let me help you. Let's see.
He saw her bend back the thick prongs of metal in the purse as if they were tinfoil or as if her fingers had become a pair of steel pliers.
Right, right.
And he's like,
Yeah, she doesn't open her purse correctly. She just rips it open.
Yeah. He's like, excuse me?
Yeah. And this is where he, so it, when he's talking to Mrs. Millick or Miss Millick in the very beginning of the story, he's he's sort of like trying to work out what this new type of ghost would be like.
Yeah.
And he flashes back to that with the quote, "It couldn't hurt you physically at first. Gradually gets its hooks into the world, might even get control of suitably vacuous minds, then it could hurt whomever it wanted." And then what happens?
He's like, "Wow, you know, I gotta go." And she's like, "No, you don't." He's like, "Yeah." And she's like, "Fred, you can close the elevator. It's fine."
Mm-hmm.
He's like, "Mm." And then we get a chase scene.
We get a crazy chase scene. Oh, by the way, this story... very short.
Very short.
But just jam-packed, because yeah. The chase scene is like half a page, but it really works.
It's one of those like really creepy chase scenes, too, where the pursuer isn't moving very fast. They're just like calling out.
Yeah. But he also doesn't really have anywhere to go.
Yeah. He's like, okay, crap. So he goes up to the roof.
Yeah.
And at this point, like when she reappears, she's just the creature.
Yeah, I mean, it's still Miss Millick, but mm-hmm. It's clearly not Miss Millick.
Yeah. Because it's using her voice, and it is like, "Hey, I could throw you off this roof." And he's mm-hmm. like, "Cool, great, that's wonderful." And he talks about, like, at the beginning of the story, he's like, "What would a creature like this want? Like, would it want to just scare you? Would it want... power? What does it want?" And we learn what it wants, because he somehow figures it out. It's like an instinct sort of thing.
Yeah.
It wants to be worshipped, apparently.
Yep. What does he say to it?
He says, "I will obey you. You are my god. You have supreme power over man and his animals and his machines. You rule this city and all others. I recognize that."
And then she says, "Why, Mr. Wren, you never talked like this before. Do you mean it?"
And he says, "The world is yours to do with as you will, save or tear to pieces. I recognize that. I will praise, I will sacrifice. In smoke and soot, I will worship you forever."
Yep. And then the thing's like, "Catch you later."
Cool.
Yep. It like disappears from her body. And she's like, "Ooh, what happened?"
And he's like, "Don't worry about it. You fainted." She's like, "How did I even get here?" And he's like, "You fainted."
They get back into the elevator car. They head down. And he was like, "So I staved this thing off for now. But then what? Like, how long is this thing going to be satisfied for? What is it going to come back? Is it going to want more from me? I have to protect my wife. I have to protect my kid. Helen, I have to be careful, Ronnie, about this. I can't talk to anyone about this." And then that's it. The world is done. Like, this thing is just gonna. I've given this thing permission to take over the world. Basically,
this is an awesome warlock backstory.
Where would the warlock go from here?
They would be like, "Guess I gotta figure out how to sacrifice stuff to my patron now." And they'd have cool soot powers.
Cool soot powers?
Yeah.
What could you do with your soot powers?
Well, I'm just imagining D&D mechanics right now, because D&D was brought up. So it would just be like soot-themed, like, warlock.
Soot-themed parties.
Just soot everywhere.
I mean, if you come to my house and if I throw a party, it's going to be a soot theme party. Hell, or at least a dirt and cobwebs theme party.
Is it
going to
have the soot
party?
Sprites from a...
okay, summon soot sprites would
summon
be one of your
sprites.
Powers. There
They'll
you go.
They'll bring you star candy.
They give you candies. That's it. That's really all they can do. They're easily disposed of. But but that's pretty cool. Summon soot sprites.
Hey, you could do some cool stuff with summon familiar with that.
So do you remember last episode we talked about a concept called vastation?
Yes.
Vastation. It was mm-hmm. that thing about like the sort of like overwhelming sense of like, oh God, this is it. This is what I've become. This is what I am. Holy Lord.
This is like that, but it's a man looking into the face of society.
There's a term for this, I learned.
Yeah?
It is called, in the world of horror, I've been reading a lot of theory.
Good. I should read more theory.
And this term was hold on, I'm going to pull up his name. It was this writer, John Clute, who is still alive, in his paper, The Darkening Garden, a short lexicon of horror that he wrote for the World Fantasy Convention in 2012. He has coined the term. He has these two ways he breaks down horror and fantasy.
Mm-hmm.
And they are in, it's like there's the definitions for the steps in a fantasy. And then there's the, like, basically dark mirror versions of those for horror.
Yeah.
Because he's like, they are so close mm-hmm. to each other, but they have slightly different agendas, and that's what separates fantasy from horror. But this is what he refers to as, and this story is used as a great example, the revel. And the revel is, I'm reading here, the moment in a horror narrative when the true nature of the world or the situation is unveiled. It's a point of revelation where the narrative confronts the audience with a disturbing or subversive reality. This can involve the exposure of hidden horrors, a shocking twist, or the unveiling of a malevolent force, which I think this does all three.
Mm-hmm.
The effect of the revel is it typically delivers a sense of dread, shock, or unease to the audience. It can be a turning point in the story where the characters in the audience must grapple with the disturbing truth. And the function, the revel marks a shift from the buildup and mystery of the story, or as he refers to it, the thickening,
mm-hmm.
To the moment of confrontation with the horror, where the story ceases to be about the subversive elements within civilization and starts to reveal the world for how it truly is. So in his horror, there's the sighting, where the protagonist becomes aware of impending horror, the thickening, where the tension and the mystery build, and then the revel, which is where it's all laid out. And then following the revel, you can have the vastation, which is where you're just like,
Yeah.
This is the worst.
This story pairs really well with the story we did last time.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like it does, like, they obviously do different things, but they're very similar, but they really kind of veer in different directions at the end. With the way that they, at least from what I understood, the way that they, like, react and respond to the revelations.
Yeah.
Like, the last story was about accepting, but learning to move on from the past.
Uh-huh.
And this, like, or the past and what could have been. And this story is about fully embracing and learning to cope with the fact that the future is happening.
Yep. But it's interesting. They both end with our protagonist and a woman friend
mm-hmm.
Who has also been pulled into this weirdness in some way.
Yeah.
It ends with both. They both end with that, but one is very comforting and one mm-hmm. is not comforting.
Yeah.
So I have a question for you.
Yeah, what's up?
About this. It's an important question. Who would you, if you had to choose, would you go on a date with Jolly Corner Ghost or Smoke Ghost?
Jolly Corner Ghost is like a narcissistic a-hole.
Right.
I would probably choose Smoke Corner Ghost because Smoke Corner Ghost is like a cosmic horror.
I mean, I guess that's an explanation. I would choose Smoke Ghost because Smoke Ghost is a cosmic horror.
Yeah.
A cosmic horror, but not, I was going to say not mean, but it is going to take over.
I feel like I might die on the date with Smoke Ghost,
mm-hmm.
but at least I'd probably have, like, an interesting time. I feel like Jolly Corner Ghost would just talk about, like, his stock bonds or whatever.
Right. Yeah, Jolly Corner Ghost also is going to make you just feel bad about yourself.
Yeah.
Jolly Corner Ghost, bad date. Bad
Smoke
date.
Smoke Corner Ghost... Probably
Why do you keep calling it Smoke Corner?
Oh, because you keep saying Jolly Corner, and I'm getting it mixed up in my head.
This is the jolly corner. This is the smoke corner. This is where you go to have your smoke break. This is where you go for your jolly break.
Smoke ghost. how many times did I say smoke corner? Probably a lot. Smoke ghost probably would also be a bad date, but at least it would be interesting.
Yes, these are the important questions, by the way.
Jolly corner ghost would talk about NFTs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you updated Jolly Corner to the modern era, it would definitely, yeah. He would all be into NFTs and Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We don't want that.
Nope.
Give us Smoke Ghost. He's just going to smudge you up.
He does make our main character's like living space really dirty.
He does, yeah. He keeps like finding like smears of soot everywhere. Yeah, the Smoke Ghost. Fascinating that Lieber is able to take a very obvious, like, what would a modern ghost be like? Ooh, it'd be all industrial and dirty. And actually make it work.
Yeah.
Like, I can't believe he pulled that off. They talk a lot about, a lot of analyses of these mention that he's very influenced by M.R. James.
Uh-huh.
Who also had, like, modern characters encountering, like, horrors. Of course, their horrors were all from the past. But horrors that would manifest out of your environment. So like in M.R. James, a ghost wouldn't just appear. It would be like the curtains would suddenly form the shape of a face and like come at
yeah.
you. Or the bed sheets would rise up and it would be like an M.R. James ghost. And how this kind of takes the notion of the Jamesian wallop and mm-hmm. turns it into like a slow burn, non-past based but still an entity of the environment. It's like, what happens if you get rid of all that haunting nonsense and realize that the future is haunted in and of itself?
Yeah. I love when horror turns away from the past.
Yeah.
Cuz yeah. cuz horror is so often about like the past.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's like, no, this is the future. It's like a Haunting of Hill House. In that the hanging lady mm-hmm. ghost. Like, that was peak. I loved that. I just love future horror because it's like, yeah, this is unavoidable.
And it's also we talk about how horror has a tendency to be a very conservative genre mm-hmm. because it's always about like the mistakes of the past and returning to the past and worrying about the past. And when you look into the future like this, even though this is a very, like, the modern era, it's very much not a pining for the past, like, anxiety about the modern era. It's about, like, there's this inevitable just...
Yeah, and pressure. And it's that thing where, like, not everyone pines for the past, but mm-hmm. everyone is scared of the future. Like, there is, like... Like, you might not be scared of the future, but there is something in the future that you are dreading.
I was going to say, this is what happens when people with anxiety just make broad generalizations about humanity. We're like,
yeah.
Everyone's afraid of the future.
Everyone's afraid of the future. I truly think everyone is at least like, they don't understand the future.
Right.
And there's no escaping the future.
I mean, there is one.
I mean, there
but it's
is.
It's a bad
but that's,
choice.
That's, you don't do it.
Don't do it. Confront your smoke ghost. Go on a date with him. Take him to the Jolly Corner. You're all going to have a good time. You're going to have a good time with the smoke ghost.
Would the smoke ghost, how would a date with the smoke ghost and the Jolly Corner ghost go?
I would think that the Jolly Corner ghost would bore the smoke ghost, but the smoke ghost, maybe the smoke ghost would just take over the body of the Jolly Corner ghost yeah. and like, do some improvements on that house. I was just like, well, the smoke ghost is going to take over the world, is going to like be the ruler of the world. What if the smoke ghost ends up being like a good world ruler? What if it's just like, all right, I got some changes. We're going to have socialized healthcare. We're going to redistribute
ghost
wealth
for 2024.
Smoke ghost 2024. Let's go, smoke ghost. And that is the smoke ghost, or just Smoke Ghost by Fritz Lieber. But We're not done. We are just beginning this fabulous formless darkness. Willow, what do we have next on our plate?
We have show? Seven American Nights by Gene Wolfe.
Seven American Nights by Gene, not K-N-I-G-H-T-S either. Actual Nights.
Seven American Knights.
Seven American Knights by Gene Wolfe, an author whose works I have never been able to get into. So I am looking forward to this one because it comes highly recommended. And I just know that Gene Wolfe he's a thinker. He's a thinking man.
It has a fancy H at the beginning of the like narration of the story.
Ooh, well then it must be good. They don't let you put those fancy H's in front of just anything.
Willow, exciting. Was,
like, lost in the story already. We
it's
lost.
It's long.
It's a long. Oh yes. So yes. So not only is this a Gene Wolfe story. This is, I believe, referred to as one of our favorite. Oh, this is a novella. This isn't even a novelette. This is our novella for this chunk.
It is 38 pages long.
Yeah, this is a good one. Don't worry, our next one's coming. The ones after it are much shorter, but
The next right one's now, after that is a Charles Dickens story.
We have one of my favorite Charles Dickens stories. So next, when you join us next time, you will join us for not one, not two, not three, not four, not five, not six, but seven American Nights. Willow, you have any parting words for our listening audience?
I have some theories about this story already, but parting words. I got my permit today.
Woohoo!
Went to the DMV.
Yeah.
It was crowded. They have no service down there.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, I should have taken my meds because my ADHD brain is all over the place. I'm going to see. Oh, I saw the new Nun movie.
How was it?
It was really awesome and I loved it a lot.
As a fan of The Nun, I'm looking forward to it.
I'm just a fan of the entire Conjuring universe, as you know. I'm also a fan of Insidious.
That's what this story reminded me of. Smoke Ghost reminded me of that kind of story.
Yeah.
Like I could see this being made into a like Conjuring universe-esque movie.
I was really confused because there was an Aquaman 2 trailer before the movie with all the other like horror trailers, and then I realized it's because the guy who plays Ed Warren and the guy who's in all the Insidious movies is in it as one of the characters.
Well, and the Aquaman movies are directed by James Wan.
Yeah,
who created the Conjuring universe.
Yeah,
like, so it's his dealio.
It was just such a jarring trailer because it was right after the Five Nights at Freddy's trailer, and then I was like, what?
But. Well, as for me, I did a story last night at a Twin City Story little thing, story show. Went over really well. I'll be doing another one in November.
My mom and I are coming to that.
Woohoo! So I'll be telling stories that involve poop and bugs.
Oh, boy.
And ping pong. So listen, so check it out. It'll be fun.
I'm maybe seeing a haunting in Venice today as well.
You're going to go see Haunting in Venice? Well, you are all over it.
Yeah.
You're all over horror.
Movie week.
Woohoo! Yeah. So until next time, when we bring you Seven American Nights, I am Phil.
And I'm Willow.
And we'll see you when
it's Del Toro time.